Damien, very excited to have you on the podcast. It's an episode I've been wanting to do for a while, particularly around having conversations with young people, but also colleagues, particularly to work through challenges. Because I know back when I was teaching, I used to really struggle to help young people work through challenges, whether that was like a little incident at recess or lunchtime or something that happened in a PE lesson. But also, I guess I was very lucky when I was teaching, probably 80 to 85% of the time. It was fantastic, but there was a few challenging colleagues at times, and I didn't really have those tools to help, I guess, work through those challenges. Now, you are an expert in this field as an educator, but also with a leader, and I've been fortunate enough to be part of the leader for about 10 months now and learned a lot. So I'm really excited to have you on. I think a good place to start is what is the difference between a coach or coaching and mentorship?
It's a good question, mate, and I'm equally as excited to be here. I've heard lots of wonderful things about you, and likewise from a teaching background myself, as you said. And I wouldn't call myself an expert. I'm learning every day about coaching still. You know, I've been in this field now with a leader for 10 years, having come out of teaching for almost 30 years. And you know, it's just such a rich, diverse field, as you know, and this is something to learn every single day. But I've been fascinated with this whole realm of coaching, and I wish I'd learned a lot earlier what I know now, as you mentioned, as you alluded to at the beginning. But your question was around mentoring and coaching. I guess most of us of my age, when we hear the term coach, we think of a sporting coach because that was when we were growing up, that was our experience with a person. So often when I'm talking about coaching, people default to thinking about a sporting coach. But we know now that if you think of all the different types of coaches that are around the world, you've got financial, lifestyle, mindset, all types of different coaches. At Elida, we have developed what we call accompaniment coaching. And it differs from other types of coaching in some ways, which I'll explain in a while. But the difference between coaching and mentoring, if you think of it as a spectrum, and right over to the left-hand side of the spectrum with someone who's just, say, a beginner at a skill or beginning a particular job, might be in a workplace, or it might be a student learning a new skill or some new information, then the teacher or the leader will tend to direct and tell and give answers and ask simple, probably closed questions just to check their knowledge. So it's very much telling and directing. You move further along the right of that spectrum and you enter the realm of mentorship. And that's quite a large realm that sits there. And then right across to the right-hand side is coaching, where rather than telling and directing, in the coaching realm, you're actually asking really well-placed questions to help the coachee in this case answer their own questions and come up with some solutions to help themselves. So in the middle sits mentorship. And mentorship is a bit of a combination of directing and telling, but you move into suggesting. Here's something I might recommend that you try. Give this a go for a while. The term mentor actually came from Greek mythology, because Odysseus's trusted friend was mentor. And so it makes sense, therefore, if you carry that forward. So it's a trusted person you go to. You can probably think of mentors in your own life, someone who you trust that you go to actually seek advice and counsel from. And you specifically go there because you want them to guide you and give you some goals and help you set up goals to actually aim for. Whereas coaching is quite different. In coaching, you're not the expert. So if I was the coach, I'm not the expert in that relationship. The coachee remains the expert. So whereas mentor was sitting down with Odysseus and suggesting things, and mentor was like the expert, in a coaching environment, the coachee remains the expert. And the reason for that is that if I go into, let's say I go into a classroom and I'm working with a teacher, if I walk in seen as the expert, then they're expecting me to give them some answers and actually come in with a judgment lens and some sort of bias and solve problems for them. But at Elida, we believe that closes down their opportunity for growth. So we come in, or I will go into a classroom as a coach, and I'll build a trusting relationship where I'll simply ask really well-placed and well-thought-out questions that enables them to sort through and solve their own problems.
Yeah, interesting. And one thing that always like stood out just then, I'm probably moving slightly to a sporting context, is coaching, is a coach, like a sporting coach, the right word? Because I feel that coaches come up with game plans and tell often players what to do. That's probably more of a mentoring, sharing ideas, and I guess in a way, like it's directive. So how do you, I guess, respond to that? Is coaching the wrong word for like a sports coach?
Well, these are just
No.
words that we've given to all of these roles
Yeah.
over the years. And when they were, if you think back, if I think back to my time when I was much younger than I am now, they were terms that were given probably without a lot of thought to where it's heading or where it's come from, if that makes sense.
Yep.
So a great coach or a great leader or a great teacher knows the difference between all three: directing and telling, mentoring and coaching, and they'll move up and down that spectrum in relation to where the person they're working with sits in terms of what do they need right now, what's going to be the best plan of attack. I'm talking to Ash right now. Where is he in his experience level in this sporting team? He may need me to be directing and telling him to help him get to that next step, and then we can move into more of a mentor relationship. But there'll be times where I'll actually coach him and I'll ask him, okay, Ash, you just got beaten in that one-on-one context. What was the major problem, do you think? Where did you actually lose that contest? And I'll let you think about that, and I'll pause and give you space to think. And then I'll ask you some more questions so you actually come up with a solution for yourself. Whereas 2 seasons earlier, when you were much younger in that role, then it would have been more showing you, directing you, and telling you.
Interesting. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, totally makes sense. And I guess that's a really an awareness situation, isn't it? Where that person has to be aware of where that, like the colleague or the student is at. And is that
Exactly.
something that we can practice?
Say again, sorry. Is that?
Is that something we can practice to be really aware where they're at? Or is there
Absolutely.
some tools you can use to
Absolutely.
find out?
We can practice it and we can get better at it every day by just being aware of the types of questions that are going to be most valuable and most powerful in particular situations.
Absolutely. So I guess some of those questions, what's the framework? I know that, like, being part of a leader, I know there's a framework that you've developed as at a leader. So what, how does that framework work? And I guess what's some really good questions that, let's go to like a coaching situation. We'll jump down that spectrum. What are some of those questions or that framework that will help our listeners, I guess, help the people that they're coaching, whether that's a student or a colleague, I guess, work through those solutions.
Great. Before you even get to the questions, you need to first have that mindset. That's what you were alluding to with the question before. It is something that you can practice. It's something that you can get better at as you work through it. But you must go in with a really strong mindset that I'm going to dampen down my bias. We talk about the ladder of inference at a leader, and the ladder of inference means that when you step up, as you step further and further up that ladder, then you bring in your own biases. So the bottom rung is to observe the environment around you and the environment that the learner or the student is in, or the employee. So it's all that observable stuff. But the further up that ladder you climb, the more bias you're going to bring in, and the more likely you are, once that bias comes in, to delve into the role of a mentor or a director and telling them what to do. So we try to stay right down the bottom and keep that coachee as the expert in our own mind, and that creates an environment of trust. And once that trust is there and they feel comfortable in that role, then we recognize that we're just a mediator of thinking who's going to enhance self-reflection and cognitive change of this in this person. So we use non-judgmental, open-ended questioning techniques to elicit that deep deep thinking.
So
And we
what?
meet the coachee where they're at. So, some people are just naturally attuned to coaching, just like kids in the classroom. Some kids are just naturally metacognitive. And it's really important to be listening and observing body language. And we talk about listening tools. How often do you hear people say, well, they just weren't listening to me, or they didn't quite hear what I was saying? So the types of tools we've put with our mindset, that positive mindset around ensuring the coachee remains the expert and us not bringing our bias in, are based around listening,
Absolutely. Interesting. So I guess you mentioned about those non-judgmental, I guess, questions or responses. What's the, like, if you are working with a colleague, or say you're a principal or a school leader, and a staff member has come to you with some kind of issue, whether that's with another colleague, what's sort of the first, I guess, question that you would get them to think about and respond to?
Well, if they came to me with a problem or a concern, then I would immediately ask them to explain that concern to me. So I would say, Ash, just run me through and explain to me what the concern is that you've got today. And I would listen, and I'd listen for cues in terms of what you're saying, and then I would paraphrase that back to you. So as soon as you've finished that, I would pick out the one or two major points, and I wouldn't say everything I wouldn't paraphrase back to you, but I'd paraphrase and I'd chunk it down to a short sentence that encapsulates what your problem is.
So you say something like, so what I'm hearing, is that how you sort of frame it? Or,
Absolutely.
yeah, what I'm hearing is dot, dot, dot.
So Ash, you mentioned there's a student who's consistently late to class. And you've been telling Damien, for the last 3 weeks that if he's not in class on time, then he's going to have these consequences, and you've dealt those consequences, and still nothing's changing. Is that the main concern? And you would say, yes, that's what I'm finding at the moment.
And then the next question.
The next question would be, because I'm not going to bring my own bias in, as a human being, my head's now racing. Okay, this is what I've had Damien 2 years ago, and I know he's got a lot of problems around this area. And this is what I tried with him, but that's mentoring. So I'm not going to do that. I'm going to keep myself down on that bottom rung or two of the ladder of inference, and I'm going to push the thinking back to you. And this is that difference between, and it's why a lot of people default to mentoring, is because it's easier. Because just try this. Now, that is not considering that you've probably tried that anyway. You've probably tried 20 different things. But what I want to do is leave you with your own ideas. So I've got to now actually shut up. And I've got the next important question I'm going to ask you is, after I paraphrase what the problem is, what could be one possibility?
So one possibility of why that person's late, or one possibility for a solution.
One possibility for a solution.
And then you listen.
So then I've got to, there was about a 2 second pause just then, and you were sort of clarifying exactly what I meant by that. But we've also got to be comfortable with the pause, because the pause is where the real thinking happens. So you've come in to me probably to get some solutions, but now I'm asking you questions. So the first thing you're probably thinking is, oh, okay, I've never got to come up with a. And you'll probably go through two or three things you've tried before, and I'll probably paraphrase those back to you. But just that conversation of you hearing back on a bit of a loop what you have tried already will probably spark some ideas of something else that could be a possibility. So now we're having this conversation where, okay, so in a perfect world, what could be one possibility that you try tomorrow? And I'll listen to that back. Okay, so there's one possibility. You're going to actually, whatever it is you put in place, and you'll paraphrase that back. Could there be a second possibility? And there'll probably be a longer pause. And then after that, could there be a third possibility? We always try to push for three. And it's amazing how often, Ash, while we're doing that, the pauses actually become shorter and shorter. because the creative energy builds up in the coachee, where they're actually gaining energy from thinking about, okay, I hadn't thought about it through this lens before, and so now what I'm going to try, and they've now got three ideas. And rather than just leaving them with the three ideas, I'll paraphrase those three back and I'll chunk them down into just little bite-sized bits. And I'll say, which of those three do you like the sound of the best? Which has probably got the most chance for success? And often they'll choose one, or they might say, look, I reckon number one I've actually tried in a different form, so I won't worry about that. But two and three, a combination of those two, I reckon could actually work. And then what we'll do is, and you can see how we're scaffolding someone's thinking. So what I'll then say is, okay, so what I'm hearing is you're going to try idea two and three as a combination. What's your next step? When are you going to bring this to life? And you say, I'm actually going to try. I've got him after lunch. I'm going to try it straight away. And further to that, if I feel like I still want to build even more into that in terms of them having a walking out with a really clear action plan, I might ask them, what will success look like? What are you expecting to see from Damien if this works?
Interesting. God, I love that because I actually have been through this process. So Hags, nickname's Hags. So in my leader group, I did a one-on-one with her, and we went through this process, and we sort of role played, and then I actually went through the coach and Hags with the coachee, and it's not it takes practice because it's not always easy to do, like in
Nice.
terms because you're so tempted to. Like give a even in a role play situation, you're so tempted to give us a, like something that you've tried,
Yes.
but I found when like Hags was asking me, and I was the coach E, like it just got me thinking. It's such a
Yes.
great process, and my at the time and just when you were speaking then, Hilly, like I was just thinking about this that process that framework can be used like across so many areas, like whether that's an incident that happened at recess time with two students or a group of students. It could be used at home with a partner who's come home from work with a bit of a challenge, or maybe you've got a bit of sibling rivalry at home as a
Yes.
parent, and there's a few issues. It
Yes.
just that framework can be used across so many areas. That's fair to say, isn't it?
100%. 100%. We're incre yeah. I mean, I've been doing this now. This is my 10th year at a leader, and right from very early on, I'd be working with teachers who, and we'd coach up groups of teachers in a school to actually be coaches, and they would have workshops with me, and they'd practice coaching each other. And increasingly, as they'd come back to, say, session three, because this had gone throughout the course of a term, I'd say, I've started doing this at home with my own kids, or I've started coaching my husband or my partner, you know. And the reason they do that is because they're sensing that it does work. When you create the space for somebody else to take ownership, true ownership of their own problem, and start thinking through a process to actually solve the problems for themselves, then there's immediate buy-in because they're not being given instructions. They're coming up with a template for themselves to solve that problem, and it's got so much more stickability and so much more chance of working. And even if it doesn't work, they're invested and they'll think through, okay, so this is the hurdle I've just hit. Now, with my idea, how can I work through that hurdle? What can I put in place to actually overcome that barrier?
Absolutely. I love that. And it just made me think, like, I'm just in my own situation. I'm mentoring a he's 20 oh, he's 22 or 23, and Hugh, he plays football here in South Australia for Glenelg. He's got a program, well, a mentorship program with his business partner Bailey. Called Focus Forward, and we catch up about every fortnight, just trying to help them get there. I mean, they're doing pretty well, but just go to that next level with their business. And quite often, I'm actually really catching myself more of a mentoring thing, which I guess is mentoring in a way. That's what we call it. But I'm basically sharing my experience and what I've done in the past. But I think I really need. I think it's there's probably a balance where I need to bring that coaching in as well and get them to use that or myself as the, I guess, the coach. to use some of these questions, like to really get them thinking and coming up with the solutions for themselves rather than me giving them ideas. So that's something that sparked that I'll definitely want to practice myself. Is there a time when, I know you spoke about you meet people at the different levels they're at, say an early year teacher, when I mean early year, maybe they're first or second or third year teachers. Is there a place for a time when you will mentor them and I guess share what works for them or what, sorry, what worked for you and see if you can try this?
It's a great question, Ash, and it harks back to what you were just talking about, your experience with mentoring Hugh and Bailey. Great, and I mentioned it right at the start, great leaders discern when to coach. Because I mean, humanity tells us you can't coach 100% of the time. It's actually about discerning when is it going to be most powerful. And so, just as a teacher in a classroom or a coach on a sporting field, who is really in tune with that EQ and knowing where people are at and really getting to know people really well under their watch, then they can discern where is this particular person right now in their learning and what's going to be most useful. Should I be mentoring? Should I be coaching? And it's a bit like feedback as well, you know, just knowing when to give that feedback and when to then discern, right now is a really impactful moment for me to throw in some coaching conversations. So it's a spectrum, and it's up to the leader, the teacher, the parent to discern when it's going to be most powerful.
And that comes down to that awareness, doesn't it? I guess that comes with practice. And I guess there's a room for or space for both. Like if you get to a stage or you start off with that coaching, asking those questions to start with, and then like it's hard not when it's hard not to slip in something that you've tried before as well.
That's a
But
good
there might be a
question.
time right at the end where you do like say you might slip in something that you've tried. Is that okay to do that?
I'm smiling because we don't. I mentioned accompaniment coaching before because there are so many models of coaching. Accompaniment coaching is closely aligned with cognitive coaching, but even in cognitive coaching, there's an element of mentorship. So, an example would be I've heard idea one, two, and three, and here's another couple of ideas. The danger of that is that the easiest thing to do as a coachee is think, okay, so Ash is the expert. He's just suggested one and two, but that's completely taking away from all of that thinking they've just done. And you know yourself, when you're really curious about stuff, when you're really passionate about stuff, when you have true ownership over things, then you'll go for it. And you'll be fully invested. When someone steps over the top of that as a so-called expert, then humanity will tend to default towards what the expert is telling them. That's why in our relationship, in terms of our leader, we'll always default to you being the expert, and we'll always stay out of that mentoring role, and we'll always dampen our own bias down. That's not to say that, you know, that there are times in the world where, and that's why I talk about discerning. Great leaders will discern. So there might be times where you actually think, okay, these guys aren't quite getting this at the moment. I'm going to actually do a little bit of mentoring here. To build them up to a place where they're ready for me to coach them. But certainly at a leader, you know, in a leader connect, and when I'm working with teachers, that's not what I'll do.
Yeah, makes sense. Can you just touch on discerning? What does that mean in the context, discerning?
Discernment means just really knowing, authentically knowing the person that you're working with. And when I say discern, it means choosing the best time to coach, the best time to mentor, the best time to direct and tell. It's just the same as in the classroom with feedback. You know, we know that effective feedback has to be timely. So when is this feedback going to be best time for this student to be as impactful as possible?
Yeah, absolutely. And when you work with schools, Hilly, you go in there and tell us about, like, if I'm come from a school and I want to engage yourself with a leader to come in and run like a program, like to help teachers.
Yes,
How does
yes.
that look? Is that like a 10-week I don't even know, but a 10-week
Yeah,
program.
it
Tell us
runs
about
for a
that and
term.
what's involved.
Yeah, it runs for a term. And we will come into a school and we'll work with up to, say, 20 teachers. And I come in with that coaching framework and I'll explain to them right from the start, you are the experts, I'm the coach. So I will be asking, I'll essentially explain what I've just explained to you about the coaching framework and put that into context for them. But further to that, you talked about the example before that you mentioned coming to me as, say, the principal, and you coming in and say, look, I need some advice. I've got this concern about this student always coming late. There's the provocation. There's the problem. What we want to do is try to provide the environment where the teachers get some feedback from their students, which I certainly never got to do when I was a student. So we have a survey tool that I'll come into the classroom, or one of us will come into the classroom and administer on behalf of the teacher, and the students look at, through those statements, they look at about 8 dimensions, 8 to 10 dimensions of the learning environment, and they'll respond depending on their age level. We have one that starts at reception right up to year 12, and they obviously sequentially get more complex as you go through the years. But essentially, it unpacks feedback, metacognition, clarity, etc. The teacher then gets a report, they'll read that report, and they will decide which area makes them most curious, or which area they might be concerned about, or which area they are really curious about, developing even more. And then I'll coach them around. So, and that's the provocation. So where you come in your example with a concern about a student, the provocation here is the, so provoking thought, provoking curiosity is the survey. And then I'll ask the teacher, what's affirming? All that hard work you do in the classroom, what are you happy with when you look at those results? Is there something in there you're curious about? And 9 times out of 10, probably 99% of the time, they'll straight away say, yeah, I'm really curious about this feedback. I get to share I get to share my work with other students. I'm really curious about that because I know I haven't done as much of that as I could, and I want to explore how I could do more of that. And I'll just straight away say, what's one possibility?
Interesting. Yep.
And
That's
what could be
great.
a second possibility? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So with those questions, like what's the like with a 5-year-old like a prep or reception student, what's some of the questions that would be
Yeah.
for them? What's the
Yeah.
example?
Well, originally when we started, we didn't worry about the we started from about year four up. But increasingly, we found that teachers were saying, the JP teachers were saying, they're little, but they're little humans, and they still have feelings about and awareness about their learning. Is there something we can do to? So we sat down with junior primary teachers across South Australia, and we came up with a very abridged, simplified version. We made the mistake at first of using little emojis, little smiley faces, but that brought in an emotional attachment. And we found that when we were practicing this and quality assuring it, that the little ones were thinking, well, I don't want to get my teacher upset, so I won't do the sad face. I'll do, because we asked them, how often does this happen? How often do you share your work with your friend? Not much, sometimes a lot. So the not much was a sad face. The sometimes was just a ambivalent face, and the smiley face was a lot. But we realized that the emotional attachment to that for the little ones was far too strong. So we changed it to something that, for better or worse, all kids recognize, which is a battery, a depleted battery, a half full battery, and a full battery. And that shifted it a lot. So we just sit down with them and we just read, there's 6 dimensions, 3 statements for each, and get them to circle on their own hard copy paper. And then I transfer that, or one of us transfers that over into the the database for a bit of a graph and a report for the teacher.
Yeah, cool. So with that, I guess those, I think younger people generally really like are honest. Like one thing that I've found, like, and always, I don't know, I'm not skeptical, but when kids or even myself like fill out a survey, am I actually like being honest with myself and my responses?
Yes.
I guess, I mean, I know there's ways you can filter those
Yeah.
out. How do you go about filtering those out? Because I'm sure there's some kids, because it's probably like an anonymous survey, is it? Or is it
It's
not?
anonymous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you can be,
Yeah.
I'm imagining that some students will just be silly.
Well, that's right. And we have a, by the time we go in there to do the survey, we've already established a pretty good relationship with the teacher. So we've already got intel around specific needs, special needs that some students might have. So it's just like any other classroom. I'll go in there, I'm teaching myself. I'll go in there and I'll explain what this is about. I'm not a teacher cop checking up on your teacher. This is your chance to have an honest say in your learning. And we want to know what you honestly feel, and that's why it's anonymous, so that you can just it's quantitative data, so it's simply clicking those battery icons. There's five of them for the older kids. So we'll put that framework up. I'll be walking around the room, and I'll be looking. But also, we can check the data. We can quality check the data at the back end. Someone's gone and clicked all fives, or all. But they're also asked, how often does it happen? So how often do you share your work with your classmates? And how often would you like it to share? So the teacher gets a comparison between how often they like receiving feedback and how either more or less they'd like to receive it. So there's a comparison there between the two as well. So yeah, we can quality assure it, but it also gives some really valuable information to the teacher as well, and the reports are really well structured. That's a great visuals for them to straight away get to areas that might be curious for them in terms of why is that a bit lower than the rest.
God, it's a pretty powerful thing, isn't it? Getting feedback from like students, because
Yeah,
it's not, I think it's such a rare thing.
it is. It
It's
is very much so.
amazing, that
Yeah.
you're given opportunity for that. And I guess from like once you work with them, that might be in the first two or three sessions. Once they get that feedback, I know you mentioned it before about working through those questions about things that they might be curious about from their what do you call it, the report they got.
Yeah.
So what's the process from there? So once they, I guess they come up with a bit of a few ideas for their solution, do they go
Yes.
away then implement it? How does that work from there?
They go away and they put that. So they scaffold through the coaching conversation that I outlined before. They scaffold a bit of an action plan. When they walk out of the room with me, they take all of that intel with them. I don't collect anything. That's just for them to take, put in place in the classroom. But what I do is I come in and I'll type a transcript. So let's say that your plan was to set up, we used that example before of sharing work with their students. So let's say that you're doing some peer work. So they sit down with a partner and they're actually drafting some work. They've written a narrative essay in, say, year nine. I'll actually type a transcript for the teacher. So if you're over on the left-hand side of the classroom, I'll be over on the right-hand side of the classroom, just sitting back quietly, and I'll be transcribing some of those conversations of what the students are saying to each other. And I'll just sort of mirror the teacher. So I'll move somewhere where they're not, basically capturing data for them so that they can read back through that transcript. They'll get some information about the start of the lesson and their clarity of what they wanted to set up and structure for the lesson. They'll also get data in terms of that written transcript of what the students are saying to each other and how well their plan for the students to give feedback to each other is actually working. We'll read through that in a second coaching conversation. So, what do you see now? What are you happy with through that lesson? What could you do differently in order to, achieve your outcome around student feedback?
God, that's so good. And that, I mean, I guess it's a bit, it's quite time intensive, I guess, in a way, but God, the feedback that you get from that would be
Mm,
so
very powerful.
valuable.
Very powerful.
Absolutely. Oh, that's amazing.
And the same thing happens, mate, in Elite Connectors. You have the opportunity to use the online version of leadership development. So working with leaders, you have six leaders from diverse backgrounds. They all have an opportunity to use the Empowering Leader Survey, where they give that out to as many people as they'd like in their work environment, get that feedback back. And we're obviously not as we're not feet on the ground like I am in the schools. It's online, but the same process essentially happens where you discern and choose what you want to focus on.
Absolutely. That's so good. I knew that. I knew that, like, obviously the work that goes in schools, but I didn't realize it was I guess that in depth, which is amazing. Because I mean, originally lead before Elite, it was lead learn, and that's how it sort of started, didn't it, with working with teachers.
It
And now
did.
it's expanded out to coaches of sport and all different
We've
types of
actually
industries. Yeah.
COVID. So when COVID hit, Matt and I thought we might have to go back, might have to do some relief teaching because it was that bad that schools were just shutting down and we couldn't get into work. We're in a few corporate environments as well. We just couldn't get in there. So we had to pivot and come up with a really quickly an online sort of version that we honestly thought would just see us through COVID. But Matt and Das really cleverly came up with this idea about getting a group of coaches together from disparate sports, and the World Coach Symposium was what it was called. And from that grew a Leader Connect.
It's crazy. Like, I don't think not enough people know about that story. Like, it's crazy, and the whole Leader Connect, how it came about. But
That's
for those who
amazing.
don't know, like, some of the biggest names in the world are involved in a Leader Connect, like NBA coaches, AFL coaches, NFL coaches, Formula One heads. Like, it's crazy. Like, and
Premier League.
Premier League, it's all over it. Like, some of the, like, it's not just in Australia. Like, these are the biggest names in the world, like, not, and CEOs from different companies, and a couple of randoms from Adelaide
You
who
and me
but,
both. You and me
yeah,
both,
no,
mate.
it's crazy. And I wrote a LinkedIn post about it a while ago. I might even put the link to it in the show notes, but yeah, it was crazy. Like, Matt Wadowitz, who he one of the founders of Alita, I remember catching up with him for a coffee about a year ago, actually. And we've known each other since probably teenagers. We've played a bit of footy together, and his first two phone calls before I met with him that day were like Joe Mazzulla from the Boston Celtics and Steve Kerr, the coach of, like, the Warriors. It's crazy, and the Olympic, like, American team. So it's, yeah, it was crazy. And he says, I said, he was just like, I know, I have to pinch myself every day.
Well, a leader is creating a world of collaboration, li
Yeah.
literally, in real
Crazy.
time. And we've just mentioned the sporting people, but of course, there's one of those in each group. There's six people in a group, and in a group, you've got a principal, you've got a head of a world international CEO company, you've got a sporting coach, and three others. It's amazing.
Do you know one thing I do? I mean, I'm sort of on the same track here, Billy, but I thought, like, when I joined my leader group, I've got some, like, reasonably high profile people in there. I thought, what am I going to add? But it's surprising that everyone has struggles. It doesn't matter where you're at. There's people that have problems, and I've actually surprised myself a bit that I felt I've been able to come up with some ideas that actually people could try. Like, when you see, maybe you have this, I don't know, opinion that they're much higher than you are in, I don't know, the spectrum of life, but it's not, like, we all can contribute. Like, it's crazy. And it's,
Absolutely.
I think we,
Absolutely. We undersell. We all undersell. It doesn't matter who we are.
yeah.
We all undersell ourselves. And but a Leader Connect creates the conditions and the environment for you to understand and learn that you have just as much to offer as anyone.
Yep, absolutely. And you don't have to, like, ex exactly what you said before, the person that your coach, the coach is really the expert. So I just have to really have a good framework to follow to help that person. And it doesn't matter, like, where they're at, because they, you know, you could be like a good, really good coach, and they could be the best, I don't know, basketball coach in the world, but you can still actually help them through. through like this framework. And and you're right there. I mean, there's principals, there's school leaders, there's teachers within a Leader Connect, and I know that you guys at Leader work with schools as well. So how can people be involved in a Leader Connect, I guess, as an individual, but also a school as well, Hilly?
Yeah, so we've got our website, and there's links on the website there. And basically, for a Leader Connect, you book a discovery call, and one of us will jump on a discovery call with you. And essentially, what we do with the Leader Connect is we work out firstly what it is that you do. So, what's your form of work that you do, and who would you like to connect with? So, what type of leaders would you imagine yourself actually getting a lot out of in a group? So, five other people, what would be your ideal mix? And then we meet as a team once a week, and we have a groupings meeting, and we actually curate groups. It's like this big jigsaw puzzle. We're trying to put everyone into the groups that they'd like to work with, and then a facilitator will take over once it's all formed. And you've got, did you say you've got Hags in your group? Yep. So you're
Hags
the
the leader, yep.
facilitator over there in Washington, and yeah, the facilitator will take over and get the ball rolling with that empowering leader survey after the introduction session.
Absolutely. And same process with schools. People can reach out via the website, or I'll put your email in the show notes as well.
So my email is on the website, but similar, if you share it, people can contact me, and we'll have a chat about how we can help you in school.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a massive raving fan of a leader. So highly recommend getting involved, whether you're an individual, as an individual or a school. It's amazing experience and I guess a program or a framework to be a part of. So I really appreciate that, Hilly. Loved our conversation. And again, like I've personally learned a lot just through what you were saying then. And it's always a good reminder to, I guess, enable people to take ownership rather than telling. And I think that's a really big reminder and really important thing.
Sharon and I were having a chat. Sorry, mate, to harp on about it. We were having a chat. My wife, Sharon, who's a teacher as well, we're having a chat with someone we met the other day. And she's a young mother, and she was saying, "I just don't know what to do with Jimmy. He's struggling at his new school." And I said, "Have you asked him?" She said, "Oh, have I asked him what?" And I said, "Well, have you asked him what he thinks and what he sees the problems are?" She said, "I haven't thought of that." She said, "Tell me more. What do you mean? What would you ask?" And so I just gave her a few simple coaching questions and a framework. And she actually, I don't know her that well, but she made a point of ringing me about 3 days later and said, "That actually worked." So I asked him what his main problem was, and he spent about half an hour telling me what it was. And then from there, I was able to ask him a few more questions about what could you do about that. And she said, "It worked." I said, "Yeah,
That's amazing. Like, and you would have thought, oh, this is what I do. Like,
yeah.
jump straight in. No, that's amazing. And that, you're right. Like, as I said before, it works across so many areas of life. And it's something that I think we often do. I think we live in a society where we want instant solutions, but just taking that time to think through things, I reckon that's a really important thing and
The
such a
power
great
of the
skill to
pause.
have. Absolutely. All right, mate. Well, thanks for your time, Hilly. Really appreciate it. And I know there's so much value in that episode that people take away. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, mate. Appreciate it.